Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the
to the Unknown Radio Network on Terrify Radio. I'm your host, Kevin of Unknown Paranormal, and with me, as always, is Miss Jody Parks. Hey, Jody.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. How are things in your neck of the woods?
Well, pretty good. Been had a lot of problems with my electronics this last week. Had problems with my Apple, my brand new laptop. I dropped an iPhone in the toilet, and my MP3 player went dead. And the MP3 player is new, brand new, too. So
wow.
Yeah, weird, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like I electronically had a curse put on me.
Well, I was having some electronic problems prior to the show. That's why I got on at the last second. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
Very peaceful. Rented a few movies at the old Red Box. Watched some movies and relaxed. And that's about it. Now I got to kind of get my butt in gear, start doing some evidence review. I got 4 residential cases, 2 fell in our lap last week. One's in Dallas, which is about 2 hours from us, but we're going to undertake it because that's what we do.
Right.
A fellow, in fact, it was Miss D Parks that we had on the show. She sent a residential far away because she's a lot further away than we are. And so I got to do that. I got to clean, go and help this other lady. Case being working on, got to go in and spiritually clean the home and kind of get them in the right direction they need to go. And I got a presentation class that I'm putting on next month at the Para Unity Conference. So I got to go through all of our new experiments and put together a video presentation of that. Hopefully got some evidence to go along with that. So I got to put a presentation together. I got to get all the details of the investigation at the conference because my team is leading the investigations for the public and all the other paranormal teams that will be at the Para Unity Fest. Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff going on, but, you know, that's what happens when we kick up a new year of our team. We get involved in a lot of things, so keeps you occupied, I guess.
Yeah. Got to.
Oh, yeah. And, in fact, let me, I got a new commercial. We're going to do this every week to kind of promote the event next month for Miss Becca. And it's a Texas Para Unity Fest. It's the second annual. And all the proceeds from this event, this is why I'm promoting it, because I'm a stickler on helping people out, not just their paranormal problems. But this is for the breast cancer awareness. So we got a lot of money that's going to be going into that from this event. So let's play this real quick.
Join us at the Texas Paranormal Unity Conference, Saturday, March 23rd from 11 to 6. Waxahachie Convention Center, 2000 Civic Center Lane, Waxahachie, Texas. Admission from $25, booths from $75. Charity auction with A&E Storage Wars' Walt Cade. Gallery reading with psychic medium Dakota Lawrence. Para Encounters Network broadcasting live from the event. Workshops and vendors. Supporting the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. Info and tickets at texasparaunityfest.eventbrite.com.
All right. Did my weekly plug for that. It's going to be a good time. I'm going to get to meet Mr. George Lopez in person. I'm kind of excited about that. I've talked to him, but I've never seen him in person. So there's several people in the community that are coming in that I've never met in person. So should be interesting.
Very cool. It's always wonderful to meet new people, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I got contacted by somebody today about a whole bunch of events that they'd like to book me at that are more Comic-Cons than, like, you know, paranormal stuff. Yeah, so I'm going to check them out, ask around if, you know, to a few people, find out if they like the event, you know, or not. And
A lot of crazy things going on in the world too. I just don't know what's up with people nowadays. You know, we got the whole South African track star with the allegations of him murdering his girlfriend, which I don't know. Either way, what's going on there, I just see it on the news. Here in Texas, here in my town, which is about 85,000 folks, we had a bomb scare a couple days ago in a shopping center parking lot. A gentleman went in Albertsons, come back out and noticed a pipe looking like a pipe bomb in the back of this truck. So they had to call in the bomb squad from Shreveport-Bossier, Louisiana, and come in and take care of that. And they found out it was just a sealed pipe with some paper in it. So someone was trying to scare the crap out of him. So
yeah.
you just don't know these days how things are going to go.
You don't. I mean, I see crazy stuff posted on the internet all the time, and it definitely isn't, the environment that we grew up. And, you know, kids today have so much more to fear than we did as kids. is crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People are all out for themselves.
Well, you know,
they don't really care about helping other people out anymore. And it seems like the people who are willing to help out, they're the ones who always end up getting, like, the most hurt, you know? It's really weird.
Well, definitely. And I always say, and I've heard a lot of paranormal investigators say this, I'm more scared of the living than I am the deceased, right? I can deal with a home or a house or a building full of spirits than I can with a lot of the folks in the world, you know?
I agree. That's why I hide a lot. I'm a hermit, you know? I'm home, like, all the time. I don't like to go out. I don't like to socialize, and it's because people are just crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like people you think are your friends, you know, a few months down the road, you might find out that they had a reason for being your friend. They were just using you for something. Fuck.
Wow. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, tonight, a little change of pace. We're going to go a little bit more into scientific and talk about different things in the scientific realm of the paranormal, and possibly some things that could explain some of the things that people are experiencing. And let me pull this up. Our guest tonight is going to be Thomas Fusco. He's an independent researcher who has devoted nearly three decades investigating the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena, with the goal of uncovering the unifying cosmological framework that was eluded mankind for generations. Since the official launch of his book in November of 2011, he has been invited to speak as a guest on over 200 national and international radio programs, including Coast to Coast AM. He will be speaking and presenting at the upcoming Spirit, Shadows, and Secrets International Synopsis, to be held in the fall of 2014 in Edinburgh, Scotland, and was a participant in the invitation-only think tank conference called The Gathering in November of 2012. Now, tonight, Thomas, Mr. Fusco will be discussing the theory of, let's see if I can say, supergeometry presented in his book, Beyond the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, that describes a new model of supernatural mechanics, which not only explains the behavior of strange phenomena like the paranormal, but also UFOs and psychic phenomena, but also provides compelling answers to some of the fundamental problems facing physics today. This cosmological model is based in part on a superphysical extension of Einstein's continuous spatial field theory, with physicist David Bohm's implement order. And let me get his number here, and see if I can get this all, and we'll call him. Got to enter this number here. So we're in for you're about to get your brain open up with numerous new questions. I interviewed Thomas last year, and man, I'm telling you, it gives you a lot to think about.
Good. I need to think.
You need some thinking here. Okay, here, my
computer. Yeah. So how into UFO is he?
Well, his theory, you'll see, his theory kind of goes along with not only paranormal phenomenon, but, you know, UFO experiences, and can explain some of that people are experiencing as well here. Okay. Should be dialing now.
Hello, how are you?
Well, pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Well, we'd like to welcome you to the show tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, Jody. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. So we have a mutual friend, George Norrie from Coast to Coast.
Oh, well, I'm not sure how close I am to George. I was scheduled to go on Coast to Coast AM, and George actually couldn't make it that night. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him. That was back on April 13th here. I was actually interviewed by Rob Simone.
Oh, well, George is a really good friend of mine. He lives here in St. Louis part-time, and then he lives in L.A. The other part-time. And so when he's here in St. Louis, I meet him for drinks. And when I have, like, questions, you know, I can text him and he sends me in directions and helps me figure out whatever it is I'm asking about. He's been, I guess you could say, a mentor to me for about 3 years now.
He's
a good mentor to have.
Well, he certainly has kind of seen it all, so to speak. I'm actually hoping to return to the show sometime this year and have a chance to speak with George, because I think that he would be fascinated with the material that I have.
I bet he would be. He's a great guy. I love having him in my life.
That's wonderful.
Thomas, you were on Unknown Paranormal Radio. It might have been a year or two ago, and I remember that night distinctly because both my co-hosts were absent, so it was just you and I, and it was fascinating, the stuff that you talked about then. And now, you know, since then, you've come out with your book and a lot of other things, so I'm curious to see what else you got now. So the first thing I would like to ask is, you know, in the paranormal, it's difficult to put science and theory together, right, as far as explaining some of these paranormal phenomenon. So how do you establish a sound scientific definition of what constitutes paranormal? And that can also be applied in the scientific and quantum physical.
Yes. Well, you know, Kevin, this is what's different, as you know, about my approach. Rather than studying the paranormal specifically, my approach was a little different. The way I looked at it was that the paranormal is a body of evidence that has to tell us something about the actual way that the universe is put together. Rather than to study paranormal specifically, what I consider paranormal phenomena is a body of evidence that tells us something about the way the universe works.
Mm-hmm.
So my work has involved coming up with a new conceptual theory of everything that incorporates not only conventional scientific findings, but also, puzzles in science that have been very difficult to explain, parapsychology, yes, and paranormal as well.
Very nice. Now, what is the generalized concept that you have come up with? And then we'll dig a little bit deeper into. So with your theories, how are you able to explain some of the stuff that we experience, not just paranormal, but, you know, UFOs or anything out there that
is deemed a lot of times unexplainable.
Just to answer the other part of your question there, because I realized while you were talking, I said, gee, I kind of missed something there. one of the first steps in reconciling all of these various fields of study into one larger picture was to come up with a scientifically relevant and meaningful definition for what constitutes paranormal phenomena. I mean, how would we actually classify that body of evidence scientifically? Yes. And so for me, after thinking about it for some time, I came to the conclusion that paranormal phenomena is best described by the scientific principle of non-locality, or to say it in a long way, non-local causality. In everything we see normally, and I'm going to use the word normal as kind of the contrast to paranormal in this case, in normal events, in normal effects, what we see is a physical cause connected directly to the physical effect. And this is what's normal. Non-local causality or non-locality is observing the effect without a direct physical cause linked to it. So to give you an example of that, from the world of paranormal, let's look at for a second at disembodied voices, or what I like to call, Kevin, a paranormal voice, as opposed to a normal voice. First, let's take a look at the effect. The effect is the same. There's no difference. In other words, we hear a paranormal voice via the same physics as we hear a normal voice. There's actually an acoustic compression wave that is vibrating the air, which is the medium, the conductor of that wave, so to speak. We know that we can't hear in a vacuum because there's no medium to conduct the acoustic wave.
Right.
So here we have an acoustic wave that comes to our ears that vibrates our eardrums according to the information carried with the frequency and the amplitude of the wave, and we hear a sound. The effect in both instances is identical, but in a normal voice, we have a set of physical vocal cords locally connected to the air column that is vibrating and carrying those vibrations to our ears. In a paranormal voice, there is no physical vocal cords. There is no apparent physical cause that is present at the location of the effect that is directly physically connected to the effect. And when we use that definition for the paranormal, we not only find that, number one, it works quite well, because every that we look at, let's say at a haunting, as sites of paranormal activity that we call paranormal, all fall under that definition. We're seeing real effects, but without a physical cause that is detectable. It eliminates some of the things that aren't really quite, to me, in the realm of the paranormal. For example, Bigfoot. Normally considered to be a paranormal phenomenon by a lot of people, I don't consider Bigfoot to be paranormal, because according to my definition, when you see a Bigfoot, there is actually a physical body that is reflecting light waves into your eyes. So the effect that you experience has a physical cause that is directly connected to the effect, which is a physical body. But if you see a shadow ghost, for example, you're seeing an effect. That's physical too, but there's no physical body causing it. And so that's what makes it paranormal. Now, if we extend to that to other things, we find that certain quantum physical effects, like quantum entanglement, also can be called paranormal. Now, see what I'm doing? I'm kind
yeah.
of turning tables. In other words, I'm not, you know, trying to classify the paranormal, in a sense, according to a scientific standard. I'm using a scientific definition to classify all such phenomena as paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I'm breaking down the lines between that traditionally stand between these fields, because when you study the effect, we're looking at the exact same problem. It's non-local causality.
Mm-hmm.
Gravity. And we may have talked at some length in our last conversation about gravity. And
yeah.
we can get that later on if you want. Gravity also, according to my definition, is a paranormal phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And so this starts giving us a broader look at things that we can begin to see how the evidence of paranormal events can actually shed light on the very way that the universe is assembled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, just a few weeks ago, we interviewed a man from Haunted Encounter. His name is Helm. And he said he uses a compass, and sometimes it'll just, like, start moving.
Yes.
I've never really heard of anybody using a compass during investigating, you know?
Well, yes, and it's kind of a clever idea, and it's another
mm-hmm.
way to pick up an additional source of data, so to speak, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the manifestations, one of the observations that we have at the sites of paranormal activity, or what I should basically say is the emergence of a paranormal event,
mm-hmm.
Can normally be associated with the detection of a electromagnetic field that is over and above the baseline for the electromagnetic state of that room. Something is
mm-hmm.
going on above that. And of course, when we look at this, when we look at the magnetic north of the Earth, the magnetic north and south poles, this is electromagnetism.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's funny that you would talk about that, because I have a 17-year-old son that has been seen since he was 3. And so privately, you know, I've been working with him for a very long time. I started taking him to locations when he was about 11 because he just really, like, he thought he was schizophrenic. And I said, you know, I'm going to prove to you that you have a gift, and we'll go out and we'll, you know, go to certain places and we'll experiment with that with you. And him and I were just having a conversation the other day because I was going through some footage of mine from the location, and I've noticed a pattern of buzzing. And I'll, you know, have my recorder with ears in so that I can hear anything possibly talking. And I'm always like, does anybody hear that? Does anybody hear that buzzing? The buzzing. And, you know, my son and I were just having a conversation about that. And I was like, you know, it's like that buzzing is like another dimension, like opening up or something. That's how I feel. Like, I don't know any other way to describe it, you know. But it's like something is causing my, you know, stuff. Like, I'm hearing buzzing. Just briefly, and then after that, I will capture something.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah?
And
so
yes.
That's what you're kind of talking about.
Well, yes, and this relates to what Kevin asked me earlier about, you know, what are the fundamentals of this theory that I have? And what I talk about is this. I start with a fundamental paradigm for the entire universe and work down from there. And if you follow me for a minute, you'll get what I'm talking about. To me, I have a definition for the universe. The universe is an expression of materialized and materializing information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about information from a scientific point of view, not more like the way we normally use it, but from a physics point of view, because as you probably know, there's a handful of words that we use in physics, that we also use in common language, but physicists mean something a little bit different when they use it. Information from a physicist's point of view is almost like the raw data that's stored on your hard drive in your computer. It's that kind of an idea. So in most objects in the universe, that materialization process of that information is fully emerged. It's fully unfolded, and it's highly stable. So we can't really see the process of materialization taking place because it's already completely unfolded and it's highly stable, it's well established, and it's just like if you saw a car driving by at 100 miles an hour or whatever it is, that wouldn't tell you how the car got started. And that's kind of right. Like what it is. But there are three areas where we actually see the materialization process take place in real time. And that is in parapsychology. We see it there. We see it in quantum. And we see it in paranormal phenomena. Because
quantum physics is such a hard thing for me to grasp. I don't know what it is, but like I've tried to watch videos on it, and like it just I don't know.
Well,
quantum physics
believe
just
me,
doesn't
you're not
like
alone.
Stick in my brain.
In the scientific community, we understand what quantum physics does. But we still haven't wrapped our heads completely around what quantum mechanics is.
Right.
So don't feel alone in that.
Yeah, I watch it and I'm just like, whoa, you know, I'll watch them like flying objects at things and how they break off and, you know, I'm just like, oh, yeah. It's a very...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But, Cody, if we kind of remove the normal labels and categories, take a look at the kinds of effects that we see coming out of quantum physics, the kind of observations we see. Boy, they have a striking similarity to the kind of effects that we observe at the sites of paranormal activity.
Yeah.
And so there has to be a connection. If we're, and this is what the trouble has been traditionally, where people have studied in their own particular fields and have not crossed over. What I say, people are looking through a single window in a building that has many, many windows. So quantum physics is a place where we see information materialize in real time. And the third... is the body of evidence that we know as paranormal phenomena. When we hear a disembodied voice or pick up an EVP, we are seeing real-time materialization of specific information. When we see an apparition appear, we are seeing the real-time materialization of information. Now, if we take it a step further, that leads us to two fundamental puzzles that we have to solve. One of them has to do with where that information is coming from. The other has to do with the process, the mechanics behind which allows that information to materialize. Now, that second part relates to what we were just talking about a few minutes before, about you detecting these kinds of frequencies, like a buzz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's almost like a herald or a precursor to the event.
Right, like something's opening. Like it's like, anybody hear that? And nobody, everybody's like, no. It will, you know, you can like hear it on real time, but not with your own ears, like you were saying before. Like it doesn't have, you know, the vocal cords for a human to hear it. Right.
Correct. It is occurring. Mm-hmm. As an electromagnetic compression wave.
Right.
Which is why certain kind of microphones can pick it up, but the human ear can't hear it.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it's always when I have my ears on. Never when I don't have them on, I don't hear that.
Right. Because when you've got those, you have headphones, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. That's picking up a input from a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And that microphone is most likely a dynamic microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, dynamic microphones are what picks up EVPs.
Yep.
Cardioid or other kinds of microphones pick up AVPs. A dynamic microphone can pick up AVPs and EVPs because it is picking up the electromagnetic compression wave as it is being induced onto the copper coils that are connected to the microphone's diaphragm. So in a dynamic microphone, the way this works is that, and certain cardioid mics can do this too, but nowhere near as effective as a dynamic microphone. We have an acoustic membrane. It is actually the acoustic diaphragm that is in contact with the air. And when the air vibrates, it vibrates the acoustic diaphragm in the microphone. Now, that diaphragm is connected to a copper coil that's wrapped around. And the copper coil is surrounded by a magnet or has a magnet going through the middle of it. And what happens is the acoustic diaphragm, being agitated by the vibrations in the air, move that copper coil back and forth according to the frequency and the amplitude that the diaphragm is vibrating at from the air vibrations. And that passes back and forth through the magnet and sets up an electromagnetic compression wave of a specific frequency and amplitude that carries information. And then that wave is transmitted into the electronics of the recorder. And then the electronics is designed so that it can reproduce it as audible, meaningful patterns of sound to us. The way an EVP works is it's an electromagnetic effect. So what we're having is an electromagnetic compression wave that completely bypasses the acoustic diaphragm. It doesn't affect it at all, which is why we can't hear it, because it doesn't affect our ears either.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say about the ones that we do hear? Because, you know, as an investigator, I have picked up several EVPs that I have heard clearly along with everybody else in the room.
Well,
so how are those, would you describe as being different than what you're describing?
Well, if you can, according to my model, and we'll get into greater detail of this, that the same effect can cause both an electromagnetic compression wave and an acoustic compression wave.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's an acoustic compression wave, you would hear it audibly, and it would be picked up by any microphone.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a true EVP, an electronic voice phenomenon, rather than an acoustic voice phenomenon, the only thing that will pick it up is the microphone.
Right.
Right.
Because that's the one that has the copper coils that will be the electromagnetic compression wave will induce itself directly on the copper coils that then go into the device, and the device translates it into sound so that you can hear it played back through the device, but you couldn't hear it audibly because it's not in the acoustic range. So this is why when you're hearing this buzzing through the earphones, that buzzing is actually an electromagnetic compression wave that's being picked up by the coils of your microphone. And, of course, as soon as you take the headphones off, you can't hear a thing because it's not an acoustic wave.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and a lot of times, right before you get a true EVP, you get some type of interference or a little I've noticed a pattern. You can always find an EVP, and right before it, you'll hear some kind of electronic noise or a buzz or whatever it might be. Then the EVP happens. So it's almost like it's causing interference right before it implants that electronic, that electromagnetic impression.
Well, this is it. What we're seeing is what I classify paranormal effects into two categories. I call them primary paranormal effects and secondary paranormal effects. The secondary effects are what we observe as a result of the alteration of the local environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, hearing that electromagnetic buzz, or hearing that kind of a static type of a sound, that's a secondary paranormal effect.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually recording a change in the local environment that's taking place prior to the materialization of information, which is the primary type of paranormal effect. Hearing the
mm-hmm.
voice is a primary effect because it is conveying to us specific information that is ordered and structured and meaningful and sensible. So if you see an apparition, that's a primary paranormal effect because you're actually seeing a collection of information materializing. But the changes in the environment that take place that allow that information to materialize locally, that's a secondary effect.
Right. That would be like if your instruments, you're picking up temperature drops right before you see the apparition, or your EMF meter picks up electromagnetic pulses or whatnot right before the apparition. So that'd be secondary.
Yes. Yes. And if we think about it in that way, and as you know, Kevin, from talking to me previously, the majority of the innovation that I bring to this field is just looking at the same information or the same data from a different perspective, just looking at it at a different way. What we can see then, what we can understand, is that when we see these effects immediately prior to the materialization of specific, sensible, meaningful, and structured information, then we can assume that those effects have to happen first before we observe the information materializing. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So that begins to give us a little bit of clue, you know, and give us a little bit of an order in the way that we look at these things, so that we can begin to peel back some of the mystery surrounding it. So let's take an inventory, because you folks are, you know, you're the experts when it comes to the observing of these things. Most people
right.
are surprised to find out that I am not a paranormal investigator. I'm an armchair quarterback. I depend entirely on the data that you folks collect for me to...
You know, I have... you've just opened like a million questions for me. Okay, I've just got to ask this because I feel like, you know, Kevin and I, we, like you're saying, we're more field workers. We work in the field, in the locations, trying to collect that data. And you're kind of, you're on the other end. And as an investigator, I feel like, you know, in some ways I'm kind of bored, like, with the same old, same old. And, you know, I was asked to speak last year at an event for my first time, and I was like, you know, I went to George, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to speak for the first time, and he's like, go to this person and talk to him. And so I kind of, I made friends with this man, and he gave me the advice on, you know, why don't you do something on, you know, explaining like old school paranormal and how the ways that, you know, we used to, or, you know, people used to do it by gazing into mirrors, gazing into water, fire. And even Kevin's in that situation where he's kind of bored and he's looking for other tools to use. So my question is, you know, us being field workers, is there something that you wish more investigators did that they're not doing?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to hear. Open the floodgates.
Well, the first thing, you know, and I try to do this in the most constructive way I can. But I do have some criticisms. That there's a lot of people that say that we investigate in a scientific way. And they really don't.
No, anybody can be a paranormal investigator. Anybody.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been on a number of interviews where the hosts, like yourselves, are paranormal investigators, and a few said, well, we use a scientific approach. And I'd ask them, okay, can you describe to me the scientific method?
Right, and they can't.
No, which is a fundamental.
No, they can describe their equipment all day long. And why I'm using this and that.
It's different from the scientific method, just like he was describing, because like I told you a couple weeks ago, we actually set up experiments, and I had to dig back in my brain from college and high school being in science class and pull out the scientific method. And you got to have your controls. You got to have your variables. You have to have your hypothesis. You have to have a controlled environment. And you enter, whatever you're testing is your variable, and you got to keep everything else the same and introduce the variable during the experiment and document if there's any changes between the control and the variable. And that's how you, and that's what we started doing. My team has started doing that with experiments, doing it the scientific method in order to try to get some true scientific results.
Yes. Remember, you know, and this is for the audience also, that science is a method. It's an approach. Physics, for example, is a field of study that employs the scientific method. Physics is the study of everything physical. Medicine, same kind of thing. We have all these disciplines that employ the scientific method, but science is an approach. So what I say to people is that running around a house at night with the lights off with an EMF meter is no more scientific. You're not conducting any more science than a tourist running around the countryside with a highly sophisticated digital movie camera.
Right.
That tourist isn't conducting science either. So it doesn't matter how sophisticated the piece of equipment is. Science is a method. It's an approach. So with that in mind, we then move to the question, which is another one that is a bit controversial to talk about sometimes. I don't make friends everywhere I go, guys.
Neither do I.
Well, there you go. Everybody who is in this field has to stop and ask themselves honestly and sincerely, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys being in the field, being like in the, you know, the trenches, so to speak, you've met all different kinds of fellow investigators, and you know, as well if not better than I do, that there is a myriad of different motivations.
Yeah.
Why people get into this field. Now, if somebody, like what you're saying about getting a little bit bored of hopping from place to place to place and collecting the same kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
But now the one type of investigator that I call a trophy hunter is not bored with that at all. The trophy hunter's looking next greatest EP. Or the next,
I love going to different locations and seeing the history, but I feel like I'm bored with the equipment that I'm using because I'm not a firm believer, especially in like the EMF stuff. I just feel like, God, what if one day, 20 years down the road, they, you know, come out and say, you know what, you guys have been doing it all wrong. Those things aren't detecting what you think, you know?
You mean what I'm going to talk about tonight?
Hmm?
You mean like what I'm going to talk about tonight?
Yeah, I guess so. Are you going to talk about that? I just, you know, so certain things that I'm doing, I'm bored with. And I feel like I, you know, like Kevin, he's looking to do different things because he feels like he's hit that, you know, wall. And you just kind of got to move somewhere else and go, okay, I'm going to try this because I've already tapped into all of that. And I, you know, as an investigator, we need to keep, you know, improving our what we're using to try and make contact. Otherwise, we're just getting nowhere, in my opinion.
But another way of thinking about it, Jody, is I'm using all those pieces of equipment to measure the environment instead of using them as the primary source for communication. I set them up to monitor everything, and I introduced the variable, which is earth elements, and see what it does to manipulate it and monitor the environment and changes that happen prior to and during whatever happens paranormal-wise. So I still use the equipment, but I'm trying to do a different approach with it. And try to go a little bit more scientific and try to monitor how the environment is influenced when these events happen.
Right. When it comes to the EMF readers, I feel like the reason I am purchasing them is to keep up with the big boys, okay? Like, you know, improving, we've got to get the next one because, you know, I'm keeping up with the big boys. But I don't, but I don't have a huge, strong faith in the piece of equipment that it blows my mind. Like, oh, a ghost is with us, you know? It's like, okay, there's been a fluctuation. Something has come in to make that go off. And, you know, if you can make it go off and come back on and ask questions with it, then I might be a little bit impressed. But if it's just going off and, you know, then it goes off, then it doesn't go back on. I'm not like, oh, my God, you know, when that happened, there was a ghost with us. It just doesn't, that piece of evidence doesn't blow my mind. You know, what has kind of blown my mind is I bought this ghost box, and I had it for a year, and I thought, this thing is so stupid, they don't work. I was not a believer at all. And then I went to dislocation last year at Rhodes Hall, and I did an event with Ghost Hunt Weekends. It was my first event that I ever did with the public. And, you know, I thought, okay, I'll just bring it, you know, just for something to do with people. Well, it actually did something that just blew my mind, and radios are actually playing it all over as one of the best ever captured EVPs that have come through on a ghost box before. Do you want to hear it?
Well, yeah, if you want to play it, sure.
Yeah, because I'd like to get your take on what you think about, you know, using radio frequencies, because now I've become a huge believer in, like, I could go out and probably buy up every radio and rig it just to...
Oh, my.
I'm such a believer in it now.
Okay.
Kevin, can you play that for him?
Yeah, hang on a second. Let's see here. Oh, here it is.
Better living through modern technology.
That's right. Here we go.
Do the other men here bother you?
We will skin you alive.
Oh! What do you think of that?
Well, I have a problem with it.
Okay.
And I'll explain to you what I mean.
Okay.
And so we're going to sidetrack on this a little bit, and then get back to the core of this theoretical model. What you're looking at, what you're talking about, I think, is what they call a spirit box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is something where it scans through the AM radio spectrum, where it has if it's a digital one, which most things are made today like that, it has an unlocked chip that causes it to scan through different bands rather than to center and lock in on one AM band.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be set to scan, like you can get 6 bands a second or something like that. Now, the idea is that somehow a disembodied spirit, let's say a dead person, when they die, they sprout an AM broadcast antenna.
Mm-hmm.
So that somehow broadcasts on the AM band. But when you have a very strong local AM broadcast frequency, it can overpower all the other bands that it is picking up from in the air, from broadcasts from different towers. And so that would be the thing that would come through, is the very close AM broadcast frequency. Now, when you're using that kind of a transmitter, you will get that pause, that dead sound, where suddenly all of the input, the reception from
goes
all
clear.
These other AM stations that are where it's scanning through these bands, suddenly goes silent. Like it did there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that there is a very close, very strong AM broadcast in that band range that is overpowering all the other broadcasts that are coming from these different stations, from these remote towers that the radio is picking up. And so this is what we hear in this tape, in this recording that you're playing for me. Now, what you hear next is not what you normally hear out of a spirit box. You hear in a spirit box normally different words that
mm-hmm.
are coming from these different stations that kind of get put together into something that occasionally sounds meaningful.
Okay, you want to hear something?
Okay.
Okay, I didn't know about scanning in AM, so it's actually scanning that in FM. And because I didn't learn that until, like, after that when I started researching it more because I knew nothing about it. I thought it was just stupid. So I always scanned it in FM, so that may have been my problem, you know.
Well, that's
But
AM or FM, the principles
that,
was that
I'm FM.
Talking about are still
that was
same.
Scanning in FM, but, like, since I learned after that to scan in AM, I scan in AM, and the ghost box now, like, talks so nasty and, like, it cusses. It talks about demons and the devil and 666, and it'll stop on, like, people talking about Satanism and stuff while I'm investigating. It's happened twice, and I'm like, that's just weird, you know? But, I was scanning that in FM when that happened because I didn't know.
Okay. So here's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Is that device is only designed to pick up radio frequencies.
Right.
That's it. It doesn't pick
right,
up.
Right, but when I'm actually, like, I'm getting cuss words coming through, where are those coming from?
Well, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Very good question. There was a device, and I'll just say this because, again, I'm being a scientist here.
Mm-hmm.
There was a device, and please don't take any offense. Mm-mm. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But
no.
Years ago, there was a device that people could buy. They were advertising it on TV that would have the exact same effect on a radio. Just playing on a regular station. And you could talk through the radio. And the product was called Mr. Microphone.
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah.
you keyed Mr. Microphone, it would have the exact same sound and effect as what you just played for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and after it said, I'll skin you alive, the box died. Like, all the batteries just died.
Uh-huh.
So the
so
whole
it's
room
very
was
difficult.
Like screaming. Hmm?
Yeah, it's very difficult to determine exactly how that device could pick up that kind of a voice in that way.
Yeah.
But we have to understand, and this is one of the things that I was talking about earlier with paranormal investigation and science,
mm-hmm.
that A, because many investigators are not scientifically trained, and B,
right.
because they approach under the assumption that science can't explain the paranormal. And so what they
mm-hmm.
wind up doing is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Means that we are going to ignore science altogether. We're not going to pay any attention to it at all. Because science can't explain things, paranormal. And so when they throw the baby out with the bathwater, they believe anything because they're ignoring the constraints of the physics of what they're doing. And the physics still exists. You see same way. You know, when you see an apparition, it is light waves entering your eyes. And there's a physics associated and there's laws associated with it. When you hear something audibly, there's a physics associated and laws associated with that. And people just ignore them. They forget them and say, and they believe anything because they're not under constraint. So they imagine an explanation and then they believe that explanation according to their imagination. So when we're dealing with this kind of a spirit box, we have to ask ourselves a couple questions. The first thing is, how does let's assume for a minute we're talking about a disembodied intelligence, a dead person, for example, the spirit of a dead person. How do they develop the skill to broadcast on AM or FM? Because that's the only thing it could pick up. How did they do that?
Yeah.
They have to be able to pick up that ability. You know, it's like when people talk about, you know, spirits draining energy to manifest physically, you know, how do they, when they die, how do they pick up the skill to convert matter to energy or energy to matter? How do they do that? You know, there has to be a physics involved because what is being observed is within the physical universe. It's in the physical realm. And if it's in the physical realm, it conforms to the laws of physics that determine that realm. If you eliminated those laws of physics, that realm would disassemble itself. It would disintegrate. So we have to conform ourselves to this. One of the questions I ask with these spirit boxes is why can't we just simply use an AM radio? Or an FM radio? Why don't we hear, if we're playing the radio when we're driving by a haunted house, why don't we hear a ghost talking to us through it?
That's true.
And the only difference is that the spirit box just flips through all the channels real quick. How does that work?
Exactly.
A very close associate of mine, David Roundtree, very scientifically minded, he and I work very closely together. You know, in the theory behind all this.
He's got some great equipment. Oh, yeah, he was explaining all kinds of stuff with his gadgets, and I was just like, whoa, what is that? Does he specialize more in EVPs?
Yeah?
It's the same kind of thing, I'm getting the understanding because I've interviewed David as well. And with anything that we observe as a human being in this realm has to be, these spirits or beings have to be able to physically, you know, explained by science, be able to do these kind of things, you know, just like making the room colder. You know, they're going to have to manipulate the molecules in order for the temperature to drop. And that's one thing that David and I talked about. You know, there's if people will look at it as like Thomas is saying, there's scientific things going on scientifically for these events to happen, right? They just don't happen without physical or quantum physics. Something has to happen in our realm in order for us as humans to observe it.
That's right. And those observations have to conform to the physics of the physical world. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to observe them. You know,
right.
For example, anything that you hear must be delivered in a way that conforms to the physics of your hearing. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to hear it. Anything that you see has to conform to the physics of sight. Otherwise, you couldn't see it. And these are the things that I talked about earlier where I say paranormal investigators, by and large, need to educate themselves about science. So that they and I'm talking about high school level science. I'm not talking about PhDs, you know, that type of thing. It's not necessary, but some foundation is. And the physical universe works according to certain hard constraints. It's a very orderly place. Just because science doesn't have an explanation for a certain event doesn't mean that you throw out science for every event. One of the examples I use, guys, is that you're not going to put your Thanksgiving turkey in the oven and open it up 3 hours later to find a Wankel rotary engine. That's not going to happen. It is outside the constraints of the laws and principles that govern the physical universe. So, consequently, we have to take a look at things like spirit boxes and say, how do they work? What exactly is happening? I can tell you this, that from the normal recordings that I've heard of allegedly meaningful information coming through a spirit box that's pieced together from different words that are coming from different stations. You know, the rare times where that does come out, I would agree with David Roundtree. There's no difference between that and a magic eight ball. You know,
yeah.
The old way, you ask the eight ball the question and you shake it and you turn it over. Now, almost every answer that comes up seems to have something meaningful to do with the question you asked. It's magic.
Right.
What you played for me, Jody, is something that is not working according to how a spirit box works.
Mm-hmm.
Something different is happening. It sounded very much like a keyed-in broadcast. In other words, if I didn't have the person in front of me telling me that this happened in front of them and that they were absolutely sure that no one else was in an adjacent room somewhere playing a trick, I would say it was a hoax. It was a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not working according to the way the device is designed.
Right. Now,
that's
another
just
thing.
My opinion based on the science of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing that, you know, we talked about audible and sight and whatnot, and this kind of goes with sight as well, but it, you know, when objects move. Like if you have a ball, per se, right? And
yes.
You have a ball move, you know, something scientific has to happen. You know, it has to have force, right? It has to have that energy move it. It just doesn't manifest without something scientific happen. Now, how does that coincide with your model?
Well, in my book, that's what I call translocational phenomena, which is the actual moving of a physical material from one location to the other with no direct physical cause that's observable that's causing that effect. But it's a good question, Kevin, and here's where we have to kind of draw it all together. Let's take a look for a moment of the various paranormal effects that are observed that we would call paranormal. We hear disembodied voices. We pick up audible and electronic voice phenomena on recorders. We see apparitions. We hear strange sounds sometimes. People get feelings of their hair standing up on end. People get feelings of heaviness. People detect cold spots. And these are things, and occasion things move by themselves. We see translocational phenomena. And if we take, and in the existing state of the art, so to speak, all of these different manifestations seem completely unrelated, physically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does a cold spot correspond with an EVP? How do
mm-hmm.
you put those things together? Well, if we stand back and just look at the effects, there is only one mechanism, one mechanical process that could cause all of these effects, electromagnetic fields, all that kind of stuff. And
mm-hmm.
that is the bending of space in the presence of physical content.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll explain to you what I mean by physical content. This is a term that Einstein used. For example, if we go out into the dark, deepest vacuum of space, there is virtually no physical content, or
mm-hmm.
there's so little of it to be very irrelevant. There might be four hydrogen atoms per square yard or something like that.
Right.
Inside of a haunted house or a haunted site here on Earth, we have physical content. We have building materials. We have atmosphere, which is gas. It's physical.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had the bending of space, if space was being bent in the presence of physical content, there would be a collection of effects that would be associated with it. And here's
mm-hmm.
where it gets real interesting. And I ask people to picture a ball of space expanding like a globe, or
mm-hmm.
like what I say, imagine the fabric of space being like the surface of an old rubber inner tube, and it's got a damaged part in it that's real thin and weak. And when you start pumping it up with air, a bubble blows out of it, or like blowing a balloon. Einstein's taught us that space is substantive. It actually is a substance. It's not what Newton taught us. Newton said that space was an empty void. It was a nothingness that was occupied by matter and energy. Einstein said, no, space is a substance. It's a substantial field that is characterized and defined by four independent variables, height, width, depth, and time, that are all linked together in what he called space-time. His prediction about space being warped around all physical objects because it was a substance could actually be bent and warped. And the experiment that he suggested, that 19 years after he published, they finally conducted the experiment with the cameras and the telescopes taking photos of the solar eclipse and then comparing the starlight in those photos to the same photo of that sky without the sun being there, and notice a 1.75 degree variation in the positions of the stars that were in the proximity of where the solar disk had been. And so he proved that space was a substance. So it can be manipulated and bent.
Mm-hmm.
We're not exactly sure how, but to make a long story short, there was a physicist mathematician named Theodore Calusa who worked alongside of Einstein, helping him with his unified field theory, with the math behind it. And he ultimately came to a conclusion that the bending of space, which is always associated with gravitational fields, happened from outside of space-time. That it happened from a realm outside of the world of matter, energy, time, and space. It occurred from somewhere outside or beyond the speed of light. So let's assume we've got a bubble of forming in this substance of space. We would see, if this was in the presence of material content, we would see a collection of observations that would be the result of the effect of this bubble opening up, like, say, in a room where there's atmosphere. So one of the first things that we would see is that the air and its atoms and molecules that are occupying that outer edge of space where it's being twisted and crushed by the expansion, the electrons in those atoms would get excited.
Mm-hmm.
And they jump up to higher orbits around the electron, or around the nucleus, excuse me. The electrons orbit around the nucleus, but they have bands of energy levels that those electrons occupy. It's what we call valences.
Mm-hmm.
And they can jump up to these higher bands of energy levels when they're excited. And so when this happens, the first thing that we would predict from this model is the emergence of an electromagnetic field that would be measurable out of seemingly thin air.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one of the effects. Another effect that we would see is that when these electrons expended their excitement and start falling down, back down in their lower orbits, it's like a circular cascade, so to speak. They emit a couple of different things under certain conditions. One of the things they always emit is a heat, a thermal energy. And so it would predict that under certain conditions, we would be able, with a thermal imaging camera, to detect a thermal signature where there's no physical body generating it.
Right.
That's prediction number two. Another thing that it would predict is that on occasion, based on the energy level, electrons can also emit photons, particles of light, when they fall back down in these lower orbits. We exploit this particular mechanism all the time in our modern technology. We pass an electromagnetic field through a physical substance, excite its electrons. When the electrons fall back down, they emit light particles. That's how an LED works. So under certain conditions, we would see a luminous effect. And, of course, in paranormal activity, at sites of paranormal activity, we see, on occasion, luminous effects. So what I say to people, if you've been following me so far and following me with a, you know, mentally with what I'm talking about, drawing a picture, here we have a ball of expanded space-time jacketed in an electromagnetic field and emitting photons. What are we talking about? Isn't that what paranormal investigators call a luminous orb?
Yeah.
Well, yep. There's the world's first scientific description of the physics of a luminous orb.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we would
expect... Okay, I got a question.
Go ahead.
We haven't tapped into anything about you with your knowledge about UFO hunting or UFO. And last summer, it's weird. I've been being asked to do a lot of UFO stuff in the last year and a half, and I've turned a lot down. And last year, I don't know if you know who Joshua P. Warren is.
Oh, yeah, Joshua Warren, sure. I was interviewed by him once.
I love Josh. He's such a great person. I actually took my group to Asheville, to where he's from, and his partner, who is kind of like the behind-the-scenes guy. He doesn't, he's Josh's partner. Anyways, he trained me and my group on night vision goggles and, you know, taught us the, you know, what to look for, what that is, what this is, what, you know. And then, you know, I met Chase. I forget Chase's last name. But she is very much so into UFO hunting, and she said she uses the thermal camera for using that up in the sky to detect UFOs. And so I get confused on, you know, learning about hunting UFOs and stuff like that. I get really confused by different people's opinions on what they're using, why they're using it, and almost listening to them argue at me about it. And I'm like, well, hey, I'm just being told by you guys, you know.
Uh-huh.
But what are your thoughts on, like, cameras to use for UFO hunting and stuff?
Well, I think that the same kind of equipment that can be used in paranormal investigations can be used in ufology also, because my belief is that the UFO phenomenon is working in accordance with the exact same mechanics that occur in paranormal.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
When you remove, what I say, when you ask the ghost in paranormal, ghost, please go in the waiting room. Just leave the room for a moment. And in the UFO phenomena, if you ask the men in black and the gray aliens and the reptilians and whoever they are, please go in the other room and wait a minute. We're going to ignore you for a moment. And just look at the phenomena themselves. They both do virtually the identical things.
Yep. Yep, because it would still follow under the model you explained for paranormal phenomenon. Is the same kind of thing that's happening with UFOs as far as the electrons, the bending of space, all of that. Because
we see objects materialize and dematerialize. We see them move in ways that seem to defy the known laws of physics. One of very common things that has been reported is the appearance of orbs, you know, that seem to emit from these larger, quote-unquote, motherships and seem to operate almost independently. See the same kind of phenomena. So I would say the same kind of equipment that would be used in paranormal investigations can be used in ufology. But now here's the kicker. If we... And remember, this is what I'm trying to do,
okay,
not only as a scientist, but also in my theoretical work. Look at it in a way like a person driving an automobile. Everybody talks about the person. Everybody talks about the individual, or what I would call the perpetrator. And they use that as the explanation for what's taking place. The aliens are doing this. The ghost is doing that. Okay, that's fine. The driver's there. I want to know about the automobile. I want to describe the car, the mechanism by which the driver is driving down the road, is doing what he or she is doing. And when we look at that, and we want to study the car, what I call the forensics rather than the criminology, I say that the best way to do this is through the study of paranormal. And the reason being is because it happens, A, it happens locally. In other words, paranormal effects inside of an active site happen in terms of feet, how many feet away it is, rather than how many thousands of feet it is up in the sky. And it happens on a human scale, which, you know, an apparition can be about the shape and the form of and the height of a human being, rather than something that looks like it's 100 or 500 feet across that's way up in the sky. And another thing is that studying paranormal phenomena is almost like studying solar flares, in that if you focus your detection equipment at the sun, you can't predict when the solar flare will happen, but you know if you keep focused on that solar disk, you're going to see a solar flare. At haunted active sites, if you focus your equipment at those sites, you can't predict when the event's going to happen, but you know a paranormal event is going to occur at some point. UFOs are much more fleeting. They're far less predictable. And so consequently, I believe to understand the UFO phenomenon, we need to first, and we're better able to first figure out what's happening in the paranormal first. And then understanding those mechanics will understand how UFOs do what they do.
Right.
Because, again, the universe is only put together one way, light. Right. Everywhere you see light in the universe is photonic. It is an electromagnetic radiation. It is a particle. that propagates as a wave. There is no light in the universe that isn't propagated by a photon, period. Consequently, when we see certain phenomena, the mechanisms behind them, if the phenomena is identical, the mechanisms behind them needs to be identical too. Everywhere you see green plants, it's a result of chlorophyll. You know, you're not going to see, a green plant that's green because it has, you know, FDNC green number 7 in it.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've found out, like, through just, you know, from talking to people and, you know, interviewing people with Kevin, is that some people believe that, one, they have a lot of reports of a shadow person over their bed when they get abducted. And then another thing is that I hear a lot is that when there is a UFO sighting, there was a Bigfoot sighting as well. What are your thoughts on those?
Well, I'm going to say something that's going to be very unpopular.
Hey, I don't mind.
Okay. And, you know, I probably will get uninvited to certain interviews and events for saying something like this. But in the short in the short time I've been on the scene, quote unquote, I've come to a realization that about, gosh, a good majority of it, perhaps over 75% or even more of all the reports, sightings, experience, even photographic and audible evidence, is all fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Is all fake.
Yeah.
There is a core of real observations and real evidence, but it is covered with so much garbage and so much sensationalized nonsense, and
mm-hmm.
it is perpetuated by the key players in those fields. I just had an experience on Facebook yesterday where I'm not going to mention the man's name, but if you look at his Facebook page, he's got all these friends that everybody would recognize in the UFO field. And he put out this video, and he's saying this is evidence that there's aliens on the moon. And it allegedly shows a never-before-published movie, so to speak, that was taken by astronauts on one of the Apollo missions on the moon to show alien structures and these spheres kind of floating by themselves and, you know, all kinds of strange things on it. Well, I caught him. I busted him because his image in this grayish black and white movie, the image of the lunar excursion model was taken directly from a stock NASA photograph. It was identical, and I found it, and it blew the lid off of it.
Oh, man.
You know, and you know, it's a fraud. And the guy started cursing me out, calling me a faggot, all kinds of things. Calling people names.
Gotta love Facebook, don't you?
Oh, yeah. But this guy is not only respected, but is actually, in a way, almost supported and endorsed by different personalities in that field that if you heard their name, you would say, oh, you've got to be kidding me.
No, I wouldn't be. I probably wouldn't be. I mean, there is nothing that surprises me in this field anymore, okay? I mean,
I am so funneled.
There's so much you see on TV that we all know. It's just baloney. There's so much baloney.
You know, there was another instance where, again, I'm not going to mention any names, but a radio host, mm-hmm. who I've interviewed with a couple times. After our last interview, he took about an hour or so to talk to me on the phone offline, and gave me an education. Now, this fella is also in the UFO field, and he's seen it all, and has met most of these people, interviewed a lot of them. He's also a producer, a video producer. So he knows intimately the modern software and how you can make anything look real.
And,
and it's completely fake. And he told me that, here's another personality in that UFO field. It's a woman. And if you heard the name and you're familiar with the field, you would recognize her instantly. She gave him professional advice, how to be successful in the UFO genre. And she told him, come up with a story that is believable and keep telling it and telling it and telling it without alteration or variation. She said, and that's how you make yourself a success in the UFO genre. Majority of it is a bunch of hooey.
I,
you know, that's why I was asking you about the equipment, because I've noticed that each person has a different way of how they like to do it, and I don't really understand, like, you know, there's a standard, you know, we use cameras with night vision, you know, for ghost hunting. But I don't feel like, you know, if I were to use my camera, look up in the sky, I'm going to get the same effect as if I am using military night vision goggles. And, you know, there are ways to record it onto an iPhone now. And just the clarity of that is just, like, so amazing. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. But then, like, a thermal image, you know, it's like I can't imagine really getting that clarity, but I guess you would get the heat signatures. And but how far would it reach up? Like, I've never experimented with that, so I'm no expert. I'm just confused because each person does a different thing, so I don't know which is what.
Jody, this goes back to a point that I made earlier. The answer to your questioning depends upon what your motive is.
Okay.
Is your motive just to experience seeing UFOs? Then you're going to...
I think it would be to actually, like, record it and to, you know, come up with real evidence to back up that, yeah, in fact, you know, I just captured that going out in the sky, I guess. You know, but also I've been, you know, a huge studier, like somebody that I've watched a million documentaries, you know, my adult life. And I've been watching documentaries on UFOs since, God, I mean, since I started watching cable and I could watch about it, you know. So it's not, you know, I don't have a motive of, hey, you know what, I can... hey, I could go become, you know, UFO hunter and I can get a UFO show, you know. I actually turned down a UFO show. I turned down a UFO show last year because I told him, I said, I don't feel like I'm qualified. I appreciate it, but I don't feel like I'm qualified, you know. So the interest is there. It fascinates me. And, you know, like Kevin, him and I are more on the collecting and field worker. So, and then let other people explain it to me. You know what I mean?
I understand.
People like you.
Well, here's the problem, Jody.
Okay.
Now, in today's world, the photographic and audio evidence that you would pick up is worthless. It's all worthless in and of itself because all of it... easily faked, and it quite often is.
Okay.
So this is a realization. If we're trying to prove the existence of a thing,
okay,
the evidence alone is no longer enough.
Yeah.
You know, when you see these TV shows with these paranormal investigators, I'm not going to say that anybody specifically is committing fraud. All I can say is, why again? Goes back to the motive. Why are they doing it? They're doing it to sell cornflakes. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's not going to sell cornflakes and keep people watching and keep eyeballs on it unless something's happening. So if
right.
something isn't happening paranormal on every show in, at a sufficient frequency to keep people's attention, they're not going to sell cornflakes. The cornflake sponsors are going to say, we're not going to buy the time on that show anymore. And the show goes off the air. That's
right.
their motive. And
yeah.
you know what those contracts are like.
Yes,
yeah.
I do, sir.
Yes, you do. You basically sign your soul away. You give them
Yeah,
the
you are.
Anything that you they damn well please in any way that they want to do it, and you have absolutely nothing to say about it. Your only choice is to walk off the set and not come back.
Right. Uh-huh.
And that's it.
And you know what?
So,
anybody that does that, I've heard of people doing that, and I have so much respect for those people. I do.
Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah.
this is, and again, I'm not saying, I can't come out and say that something was done fraudulently. All I'm saying, A, if you look at the motive, B, if you look at what their goal actually is, who is actually in control of the production and what gets shown.
Yep.
And C, considering what modern technology is like and considering you're just looking in a window, you know, like somebody, you know, is using a spirit box, you know, in a house, and they're using it all night, and they get hundreds of garbage responses out of it, and they get three things that sound meaningful, those are the only things that you're going to see.
Yeah.
They're not going to show you the 100, you know, the 500 minutes of garbage where
mm-hmm.
it's
right.
nothing. And so people get, you know, you just can't depend on this kind of evidence. However, if you have a theoretical model that is scientifically consistent and sound, now you have something. Now you can say, you can begin to have evidence that makes sense, that is meaningful, because this piece of evidence coincides with this theoretical model. And this theoretical model would state that we would also pick up, you know, evidence type 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. At the same moment, if we were using the right detection equipment focused at the same emergent point, so to speak, and then it picks up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, according to the theoretical model. Now you got something. Now the evidence can mean something, because it's in context to what the theory says should be happening. And that's
yeah.
the next step in the field of the paranormal investigation.
Well, one thing that I'm looking more into this year with some of the experiments that I'm going to conduct is, you know, a lot of people in the field They're looking for ghosts. They're looking for experiences. They're looking for this, that, and other. But how much time is taken to look into what us, the human condition, what we as people, how we can influence an environment scientifically? You know, how much do we manipulate the environment where we think, like you said earlier, we're not educated enough. So how do we know that us as people are influencing and causing these phenomenon to happen and we're not noticing it and we're going, oh, that's a spirit, right? So I want to take a further look at the human condition and what actually goes on. And I got this idea from another friend of mine in the field that is doing some tests on this as well, and I'm going to try to follow in his footsteps and
test some stuff as well on this is, you know, what's the human condition? What's going on when these phenomena are actually happening with our bodies? What is the effect of all of this, you know?
Here's what I would say to that, Kevin. And this is from my personal perspective, okay, from my motive. I want to know how the car works. I'm not concerned about who's driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, whether a disembodied intelligence is causing an effect or whether a physical embodied intelligence, like a human being, is causing the effect is still being caused by the exact same physics.
Right, right.
So what I feel the field needs to do is to concentrate less on the perpetrator.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what this field has done for decades.
Right.
You know, even from the 1800s. And mm-hmm. where has it gotten us? It's gotten us nowhere.
Right.
Now, it's we've made little tiny incremental advances in being able to better record and detect effects, observations. But it hasn't brought us anything, any way closer to understanding what is actually going on.
So what would you say to paranormal investigators to focus more on in the future to help prove what it is that we're really, you know, trying to do, the answers we're trying to seek? Methods are we not using maybe enough of?
Well, the first thing is that we now have two theoretical models in the field that we have never had before. One of the most difficult challenges that I have is to make people understand, make investigators understand the combination, the collaboration of this gentleman, David Roundtree, and myself, have it opened up an entirely new era in the paranormal, that we have something that is so far beyond anything that is in the state of the art right now, that it's like I say, it's as far advanced to the state of the art today as Newton was to Aristotle. And that's hyperbole when I say that. What we are observing, every single effect that we have been able to observe and that Roundtree has experimentally confirmed, is that at the onset of a paranormal event, the effects of the local environment are identical to what we would expect with the opening of the mouth of an Einstein-Rosen bridge in the presence of physical content, which the colloquial word for an Einstein-Rosen bridge is a wormhole.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave and I talk about wormholes and the physical, you know, the effects, the scientific thought behind paranormal phenomenon in a wormhole.
Now, my model, my theoretical model in my book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, is a different model in terms of what the cause is.
Mm-hmm.
See, David is focused, again, he's focused through that one window.
Right.
And he has come up with this theory based on the findings he's been getting.
Mm-hmm.
What's remarkable about what I've done, and this is what's really crazy and fantastic, is that my model addresses the way the universe is put together, the paranormal being part of that universe, and it predicts the findings that David has gotten. It's totally independent of one another. You know, our work, we didn't know anything about each other till early last year. And then when we compared notes, and I kept saying, according to my theoretical model, if you conducted this experiment, you would find this. If you conducted this experiment, you would find that. And David kept saying, I conducted that experiment, and that's what I found. That has never happened in this field before. People don't understand that we have had a paradigm-changing event in this field. So that we now understand. It's like one of the things that my model predicts is that at the emergence point of a paranormal event, we should be able to detect a fluctuation, the emergence of an independent gravitational field that works on three axes. And David's experiments have confirmed that. We should be able to detect distortions in time because the bending of space bends time as well because they're linked together, as Einstein proved. And David has run experiments and have confirmed that time becomes distorted. It bends at the emergence points of a paranormal event.
Mm-hmm.
This is far beyond anything that would done before.
That would explain clients that I've dealt with that have had a lot of paranormal activity or things going on physically with themselves where they would have a lapse of time that they don't remember. You know, it's like something's happening, and they would think it was happening over a period of 5 minutes, but in true reality, it happened over an hour.
It could, yes, because we don't fully know the effects on a human body and a human brain of putting it in the presence of the warping the space that it occupies. Because you know, according to Einstein, those physical materials are an extension of the geometry of space-time. That's what's called the space-time continuum.
Yeah.
You know, space and time continues in and through and out of objects, and objects are actually concentrations of the geometry of space-time. So one of the things that we do know, though, by this model, is that if the bend was wide enough and large enough, and it would begin right before the appearance of a primary paranormal effect, since it's creating an additional gravitational field, one of the things that we would expect, and sit down for this, one of the things that we would expect people to report is experiencing just prior to the event of a feeling of heaviness.
Right.
Suddenly,
that makes sense.
Starts getting connected together.
Mm-hmm.
We now have a physical model that is scientifically relevant that would predict every single paranormal effect that's seen at a haunted site. Now, how about things moving of themselves? Well, remember, not only are they an extension, a concentration of the geometry of space-time, but they also have a jacket, a sphere of bent space surrounding them. If that bending of space could be manipulated non-locally from outside of space-time, if you can, in other words, not move the object with energy and force, but actually move the bubble of space-time that surrounds it, and the object would follow. If we could master that physics, we could move an object by manipulating its space-time bubble that surrounds it as easily as you slide icons across a tablet with your finger.
Mm-hmm.
This is something very different, and it's very big. This is the breakthrough that has been looked for by serious paranormal researchers for decades. We got it.
Yeah. Well, we're down to the last 4 minutes of the show, so I want to give you an opportunity to put out websites, whatever, so people can look you up and find your book and whatever else if they want to find out more about you and your model.
Okay. Well, everything that you would need to find out the description of the book. It's called Behind the Cosmic Veil. The subtitle is A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. Related articles, links to where to buy the book. The best you can buy them, Barnes & Noble and Amazon, but the best prices through our publisher, our distributor on the website. All that can be found at www.cosmicveil, spelled V-E-I-L, www.cosmicveil.com. And if you want to learn about David Roundtree's work, you would go to www.spinvestigations, as one word, the word investigations with S-P in front of it, spinvestigations.org.
Very nice. Well, it's always
thank
a pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It was so great to hear all your theories.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it very much and had a great time. Gosh, as you can tell, we barely scratched the surface of all this.
Right.
Right? Now I'm going to be thinking about wormholes and, you know, it kind of goes back to, like, when I was talking earlier about, like, with my son, I was having a conversation, like, when I asked him, like, do you ever hear, like, buzzing while you're investigating? And he's like, yeah, I have. I'm like, it's like another dimension opening up. So it's kind of like a wormhole in a way. Like,
information is coming to our local space through a physical structure that is allowing it to come into our local space. And as it emerges into that structure, the information materializes into a physical form that we can experience and observe. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I would love to have you and David on together.
We do a great show. David just adds so much of the practical aspect because he's hands-on field investigating. It makes a great show, and we work together very well with that.
Good deal.
Very nice. Well, we'll have to arrange that, Kevin.
Oh yes, and for folks listening, if you want to listen to Thomas again, he's going to be on my show, Unknown Paranormal Radio, this coming Sunday. And I'm excited because my two co-hosts will be there, and I told them about you and your theories and whatnot, and so they're excited to hear about your model and whatnot. So it should be a great show.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's this coming Sunday. According to my calendar, it's the 17th, isn't it, of March?
Oh, yeah.
Paranormal.
I'm off. I'm getting excited to have you on the show. Yeah, March 17th when Thomas on.
If you got an open slot and you need a guest, give me a call. I might be available.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, and I look forward to March 17th.
Okay, thanks for having me, Jody. Great to meet you. Hope we talk soon.
You too.
You know, hey, had a great time. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
You do the same.
All right.
You know what? That was pretty awesome.
I told you.
I feel like I actually learned something. Sometimes we just get a little crazy and we don't really, you know, talk about, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
But now I'm going to go bug David. I'm probably going to inbox him and be like, all right, dude, you know, what are you doing? Tell me your tricks to the trade.
I
told you. He probably got the equipment for sale and stuff because he was showing me all kinds of really cool stuff when I met him last summer at the Emmett House.
Uh-huh.
And he had some really cool equipment that I hadn't seen before, and he had told me he was, you know, putting it all together, and he was explaining it to me, and I was just like, wow, dude, like, this is pretty cool. So he's doing it definitely really different. So it'd be cool to have him on. I'd like that.
Oh, yeah. I've interviewed David, and he's same kind of thing, and he's more into the field. So, yeah, I'll have to get him on, and you know, we'll get it going. We'll try to get them both on sometime to really get into this. Like I told you prior to the show, it'll make you think. You'll start looking at things in a different way as far as,
yeah,
you know. And that, when I interviewed him before, when I talked to him, and then I also interviewed David, that's where all of this that I'm doing now, it kind of spurred me into thinking more on the scientific level, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm doing with the group, and see, with having Mike as a psychic medium on the group, not only do we have the scientific side going on and actually truly trying to study some of this, we still have the psychic side as well, right? So it just makes a wider band of things that we're doing. So, yeah, like I said, it gives you an idea of what's really going on in our environment when we're experiencing what we're experiencing. Something has to happen scientifically for us in order to hear an EVP or a disembodied voice. It's just not, just doesn't show up without being explained, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I knew you would like it. It's a different route we took tonight, and now my brain's tired.
I like it. I like it a lot, you know? I mean, that's part of why I wanted to do this show with you, so that I could meet people and to learn their beliefs or their theories. And
Well, you know, like you said, you get kind of bored with the same old thing. You know, the more people you talk to will spur your own ideas that are unique and your own, and will give you some different ways of doing investigations in the future.
Yeah. Well, I now I'm going to go and, like, research David a little bit more, find out what he's selling, and I'm going to ask him some questions, you know, that now I have more of them. But,
Now that I'm actually looking at the right month, on the show next Tuesday is Miss Sierra Sky, who unfortunately couldn't come the first time we booked her, but she's already touched base with me, and she'll be here.
Cool.
And she's another strong woman in the field. She helps clients out with a lot of, she can deal with a lot of darker type stuff. So, and she's a spiritual healer, does a lot of things, and I've really enjoyed interviewing her before. So that's who we have on next Tuesday. And
spiritual healer, like, what do you mean by that? Like,
she tries to help
heal people.
And she tries to help spirits cross.
Okay.
Spirits that are lost, that don't know why they're where they're at, right? She tries to help them go where they need to go.
Well, isn't that more like in the cleansing, crossing over?
No, crossing over. She helps them cross over. You know, it's
okay.
A spiritual healing, or healing within ourselves, you know, because that's part of what you have to do as an investigator, is help the client heal themselves. Because a lot of times, if you don't fix the client, then the paranormal activity is never going to go away. It's always going to be there. So those are some of the things. She's got a vast amount of different things that she does. So it'll be a very
good
conversation.
Look forward to hearing it.
Yes.
And tomorrow we have Full Spectrum Radio with Matt Sensarik and Dennis Green. I don't know if his last name's Green. I probably said that wrong, but it's Dennis and Matt. Full Spectrum Radio tomorrow, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. And this Sunday, since I get it all right, this Sunday is Dr. Rita Louise, a good friend of mine, been a lot of events with her, psychic medium, and she'll be on the show this Sunday. So that's what we got going on. I hope everybody had a good evening. We're going to wrap this up. I haven't picked out anything to play us. Jody's computer's on the fritz, so I'm going to have to find us something.
Yeah, my computer died, so I'm watching it, like, try to come back to life. And I took it to the Apple store today. They said my hard drive is shot. But I can still get it to boot up so I can, like, transfer all my stuff to a hard drive before I take it and get a new hard drive. And they're going to clean it all up, they said, for me on the inside. And then my laptop just died on me, dude. Like, it's just dead. Like, what's up? For some reason, like, nobody wants me on the internet. They want me to use my phone right now. Well, you know, then I dropped that in the toilet. I had to get a new one yesterday. Jesus, Kevin. I'm a mess. I'm an electronic mess over here.
I hear you.
All right, you going to play me something good? Something good. Hey!
I'll try. I don't know if it's good, but we'll see. Everybody have a good night, and we'll see you again next Tuesday right here on Terrify Radio.
Unknown PG. You are in.